You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Allison.
Yes.
I'm back from Indiana.
You were last week, too.
Well, the patrons heard.
Oh, okay.
This is on the regular show. They might think...
that you're still there.
Those that are not patrons...
you liked it so much.
...might think I'm still in Indiana.
You're switching time zones.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that isn't switching time zones, right?
No, I think we were still in
you're Eastern. On the border.
Yeah. A little bit more about Indiana in a second. Right now... I want to talk about tonight's show. We'll be talking with Paul, who has this really interesting story about seeing eyes in the woods. And that's not what you think. It's not like eye shine or eye glow. He actually saw eyes and nothing else.
Like just eyeballs?
Kind of just eyes. Yeah, it's interesting the way he explains it. They look like they should have been in a figure, but they were like just the eyes. Like he couldn't see the figure.
That's creepier than like red glowing devil dog eyes.
It might be, yeah. I don't know. But his encounter also has elements of my favorite Bigfoot encounter that was ever on the show. It might be my favorite Bigfoot encounter ever when Gage was on the show and he saw the white creature and his friend saw the black creature and his other friend didn't see anything at all. It's such a great encounter. To me, it's everything about the weirdness of Bigfoot. There are elements of Paul's encounter with his friend that remind me of Gage's encounter a little bit. So I think it's a pretty interesting conversation. We'll get to that in a bit. Before that, we'll talk a little bit about Indiana. Now, patrons heard a much more involved and much more dramatic version of this because I was kind of still recovering, I think, from what happened in Indiana when we recorded that show. It was very interesting, very intense at times. And the way I landed with that is I'm going to tell the story. I'll tell everybody what happened, but I got to figure out the best way to do that. I got to figure out the most respectful way to do that to the people that live on this property. And I will do that. It's just going to take me some time to figure it out. I will get there. So I promise you'll get to hear about it, but it's going to take me a while to process it. I did get like a kind of had the paranormal blues when I came back, you know. I called that patron episode, I Left My Heart in the Witch Ditch, and kind of felt like it a little bit. It was like, it was kind of hard getting back into the swing of things. But I feel like I'm coming out of it now. getting back to the normal schedule, back to Strange Familiars Land, back to recording interviews and making shows and doing the things that we do here. So without further ado, let's go ahead and hear my talk with Paul. I'd like to welcome Paul to Strange Familiars. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Good to talk to you. Appreciate the time and interest in the story. And I think it might be of interest to some listeners, too, because it's kind of unusual, something I don't hear too much. So I guess I'm sharing it as much to, you know, tell the story, but also to get your thoughts and maybe other listeners' thoughts and see if anything similar might have happened to them.
Sounds great. As much as you're comfortable, you can be general if you don't want to get too specific. Where did this happen and when?
Yeah, I can get fairly specific because I do think it matters. So this was probably, trying to guess, I'm a little older now, but this happened when I was around 9 or 10 years old, which means it was 1981.
Okay.
And I grew up in a town probably 20 minutes outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's a small town. They had, you know, some housing and stuff. I wouldn't consider it, you know, completely rural, but there was some pastures here and there, a lot of older homes. They had some new subdivisions being built. But for the most part, it was a lot of two-lane highways, right? Two-lane roads, and just a lot of woods and swamps mm-hmm. around this particular area. This story happened when I was, like I said, around 9 or 10. I was trying to recollect as much as I could around, you know, even what I was wearing, what the weather was like, that type of thing, just get as much as I could back to the front of my mind. And I believe it had to be, it's always warm in this area anyway. So, mm-hmm. you know, the only time it's actually cooler weather where you don't have to wear shorts is usually in the months of, let's say, November through February. The rest of the year you could wear shorts and be happy. So it's suffice it to say it's, you know, around that time, sometime between, I say, March and October. A couple things that had actually happened. It was me and a friend were playing one day, riding our bikes, hanging out. And as a friend of mine lived down the street, he was about a year or two older than me. I think, I can't remember exactly, but one or two grades ahead of me. Very serious kid, straight A student. I remember he was an altar boy, was raised Catholic. He was an altar boy. So pretty serious kid. Didn't play sports, you know, really wasn't into that. Wasn't into a lot of, I would say, probably typical things, you know, young boys are into, but good person. You know, we hung out a little bit, not too much, but every now and then for a change, you know, we'd hang out and go ride bikes or something together. So he had, where he lived down the street, across from his house, kind of catty corner, was an empty field. And that field backed up to a ditch and then a wooded area. Now, at this time, you know, again, in 1980, 1981, that wooded area connected to thousands of acres of swampland, of forest, woods, that also bordered Lake Pontchartrain down here. So it was really just a big, massive area that was undeveloped, you know, no cleared land, even in terms of, like, you know, power lines or anything like that. It was really just a lot of swamp and fairly dense woods. And here, you know, in Louisiana, everything's nice and flat. So there's really no hills or mountains or anything like that you have to worry about. But there's a lot of swamp, mm-hmm. you know. So, I mean, you could be walking in the woods and before you know it, you know, you start to get into kind of a boggy area, and then, you know, you could be up to your waist in water if you're not too careful and you know, make sure you look at where you're going. But the main point is that this particular area, the little wooded area we went into, it wasn't surrounded by homes or development or buildings or anything like that. It really was connected to a massive patch of forest, for lack of a better way to describe it. So this particular day, we were riding our bikes and we decided to go take our bikes into the woods. And they had some trails to ride on and walk on. Nothing I would say that's completely clear, right? Like a lot of hiking trails out there are nice and wide and fairly clear, you know, 3, 4, 5 feet wide. I'm talking something that, you know, maybe a foot wide, mm-hmm. Just something very narrow, a lot of vegetation, a lot of humidity, you know, a lot of growth. So, you know, we're just being kids. We went there to explore, took our bikes. They had some wooden planks. I guess it's probably just some old 2x4s or whatnot that covered the bridge. Covered the ditch and, you know, used as a bridge to get into this wooded area I'm talking about. So we brought our bikes in there and just started, you know, messing around, looking on the ground, playing with the trees and bushes and stuff. And we started hearing some things, and I can't recall exactly what the sounds were. I don't know if it was movement. I don't know if it was a certain type of sound, but I do remember it bothering us enough that we had to leave. Right. We were like, okay, it's, you know, getting a little overbearing. Let's just go ahead and get out of here. Again, we didn't see anything. Nothing touched us. Nothing, you know, was thrown or anything like that, as I recall, but something spooked us that day. Mm-hmm. So we left. I can't remember if it was the next day or, you know, maybe later that week. We went back in the forest. Same thing, you know, pretty much had forgotten about the first event, right? So the second time we go in, I was in front. So, again, crossing the little wooden bridge, going into the woods. We're walking our bikes. And we probably get in, I don't know, probably about 30 feet in. So, you know, we're both in, into the woods. And I do remember hearing something moving. You could hear the bushes move. I don't recall any particular sounds like, you know, growlings or whoops or any types of cries or anything like that. But there was definitely bushes moving, sounds, and it got closer and closer to us, right? So, you know, we can't see anything, mind you. We don't see anything. There's no other friends of ours in the woods. There's nobody, you know, in there trying to scare us or play a joke on us or, you know, just no adults in there hunting or, you know, doing anything like that. But it kept getting louder and it got to the point where we felt, okay, it, whatever it is, we can't see it, but it's getting closer and it really started to scare us. And what's most remarkable about the story is, you know, it scared me, of course, enough to remember it all these years later. But the biggest thing I remember is how it affected my friend. So as we hear it and decide, okay, we got to get out of here, we turn around, right? So he's leaving the forest first because I was the first in, mm-hmm. Okay? So he crosses the bridge, and as I'm crossing the bridge, I look back, I turn around. I don't see anything in my eye level. And again, I'm 9 or 10 years old, so I'm, you know, probably 4 foot something, right? I look up, and I'm trying to put it together, but I would probably say it was around a seven or so foot area. I saw two distinct, what I believe were our eyes, looking at us. They were shaped like eyes. They were separated like eyes would be on a face, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't see the pupils. The opaqueness was kind of whitish, yellowish. It had, I recall, some kind of black flakes in it, in the eyes. In other words, it wasn't kind of a, you know, a nice clean oval, you know, with a round pupil in the middle. It was kind of jagged around the edges. But again, if you had to look at something quickly, it looked like eyes. And I'm sitting there looking at it, and I'm like, you know, oh my God, it scared the hell out of me. By this time, Jeff is, he had to have seen more than I did. I'm convinced of that because he's pretty much gone hysterical at this point. And mind you, he's, you know, probably 11, 12 years old. So we get into the empty lot. Again, we're moving pretty fast. Go on to his house, which again is catty corner from this lot. Across the street is his house. I look back as we're going and I see the eyes again. Now this time I don't see them high up. The second time I see them, they're lower. They're probably maybe 4 or 5 feet off the ground. Now, I don't see a body at any given time. I don't see any shape, mm-hmm. Any form that it's connected to, which, of course, made me think about some type of, you know, people talking about camouflage,
right.
Bigfoot, you know, people talk about spirits and stuff. And, you know, I, of course, at this point, I don't know what it is, right? It's till late, it's later that I start thinking about these things. But so anyway, I saw the eyes a second time. Get to Jeff's house. And he is, we put our bikes down, we rush inside. He really is beside himself. And he's telling his dad, I remember this distinctly, he's telling his dad. And again, you know, Jeff's a serious kid, right? There's no, not a dramatic person by any means. You know, I don't even think he had much of a sense of humor. So he's telling his dad this, and he's crying as he's doing it. I mean, he's red-faced, he's heaving almost. And, you know, his dad doesn't believe him, you know, at least at first, right? And it got so heated, I left his house. We talked a little bit about it, and, you know, he was very passionate about him seeing something that he thought was like a ghost, right? He thought it was more of a spirit thing. I believe whatever it was that he saw, which is a little bit different than what I saw, I think in his perspective, it was more material. It was something that, you know, he could associate with, like, you know, AKA a ghost or a spirit. I don't think it was completely opaque, though, even from his standpoint. I still think it was something that was somewhat transparent. But for me, what stuck with me all this time are the eyes that I saw. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, it never left the forest, right? Like it didn't follow us into the lot and across the street. It's almost like it stayed at that perimeter. And I found that to be interesting, kind of looking back,
yeah,
you know, at it.
Yeah.
It did make sound, whatever it was. We heard enough such that, again, the first time it made us leave altogether. The second time, I don't know if it was the same thing, right? I can't be sure of that. But the second time, if it was the same thing, it definitely got much closer and, you know, was to the point where, like, when I was about to cross that bridge and I turned around to let you know how close it was, I mean, if it was a solid object, it was probably within 2 feet of me.
Mm.
I mean, I literally could have touched it.
Oh, wow. That's close.
So that's what I'm saying. Cause like I said, when I turned around, right, again, I'm 4 foot something. I'm looking into the woods behind me. I didn't see anything yet. When I put my head up, like I tilt my head up, that's when I saw the eyes to let you know how close it was to me. Mm. You know, that freaked me out. So yeah, you know, it's something that I've done some research on. You know, I've been paying attention to a lot of things out there, watched a lot of different channels. And, you know, like I'm an educated person. I'm in technology. I have an advanced degree. I do well for myself, highly analytical. This isn't, you know, just hyperbole. You know, it's not just something that, you know, oh yeah, I remember that happened. You know, let me share it. I really think there's something to this and something to a lot of these encounters that are out there, whether that be something more related to Bigfoot, something related to some other, you know, dimension, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And I was telling a friend the other day, you know, when people started thinking about life out there, you know, outside of Earth, right? And I forget what the name of it. It was Fermi's paradox. It's some paradox. Used to be known as the Drake equation. And essentially what it was is that, you know, if you just think about all the planets out there that are in the solar systems and star systems in the galaxies, all the galaxies in the universe, it doesn't take long to look at the math, right? And assume, come to a conclusion, if you will, that, okay, chances are there's other life out there. Mm-hmm. I look at the math for things like this. If you just look at the math of the reported encounters, right, it's impossible in my humble, you know, mind that it's impossible to deny that it's, you know, not, something's not happening, right? Something is occurring. All these people that have seen all these things, that have experienced all these things, some of which, you know, of course, are a lot more tangible and impactful than mine was. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of these things have been, you know, horribly life-changing to a lot of people. These are just, you know, slight emotions or feelings that they have. These are things that they've experienced something. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, there's a lot of these experiences. I mean, there's a lot. I had heard at one time, and again, I take into account a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different sources of information, you know, and I try to come to my own conclusion on some of these things. I had heard along the way that, and again, this is more on the Bigfoot Sasquatch side, but the math supports essentially other things as well, other entities that have been encountered or observed or experienced in some way, that, you know, a fraction, well, maybe not a fraction, but let's say a small percentage, like 20%, 15 to 20% of encounters are reported, which means, you know, a huge majority is not reported, right? Yeah. And if you are to believe that, which I do, there's probably, you know, 15, 20 encounters a day that happen that's just taking place and really, for the most part, being taken for granted.
Yeah, know? Yeah. And depending on the person, depending on the culture, because of my proximity to the Amish, people often ask me, oh, do you ever get any stories from the Amish? No, they won't talk about it. They have stories. Mm-hmm. They have stories, but they will not talk about it. Culturally, it's just not something they do. So, there's a lot of factors that go into that. There's some people who just can't handle it. They'll just shut down and never talk about it. You know, for whatever reason, they don't want to acknowledge it. They're not going to talk about it. And it's not always people that were scared to death. And for some people, it's almost like they forget about it in a very weird way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a weird thing with this. But yeah, I'd say your math is about right. Just on the number of people that, you know, sometimes you can get somebody to tell you something, like say I'm doing a live event, like a, you know, a conference or something. You can get somebody to tell you something, but then getting them to be public about it and to document it, you know, either to go on the podcast or give me an interview for a book or something, it's a lot lower percentage. Then they start backing away like, nah, I just wanted to tell somebody. I get that a lot. I just wanted to tell somebody who would believe me, and that's it, you know, so... Yeah, I'd say your math is right there. There's a lot more encounters than are being reported.
Yeah, and you know, I know you stay in contact with some folks, you know, in UK, right? Or at least I believe that's where they're from. Some friends of yours, and you know, some stories from over there, and they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and you look at all the UFO UAP things that's going on right now. Again, I just think there's so much we don't know. But I do feel like holistically things are moving in the right direction. And what I mean by that is that I think if people can just be a little bit more open-minded, you know, not be too passionate one way or the other and just, you know, take it for what it is and trust what people are saying and trust that most of them are being genuine. You know, there's always going to be some flakes out there, some people that, you know, just want attention and blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, it's not that hard to sniff those guys out.
Yeah. Again, on that front, I had a guy who listens to my show. He was trained as a blackjack dealer. And he said they trained him to know when people are bluffing. He said, you know, I'm not sure how true. This is just what he told me. He said, I can tell when people are lying. And he said, of all your episodes, and this was a phone call I had. I probably only had 100 or so episodes out this time when I was talking to this guy. But he said, of all your episodes, you've had two people that I haven't believed. And he said, do you want to know do you want to know who they were? I said, no, actually, I don't. Like, I don't think there's any good can come of that. But no, it was good to know that average that he said. Most people don't lie. I'm sure there are some instances of mistaken identity. Somebody might see something that they assume is something else.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, you know, just talking about Bigfoot, just to make it easy, people know what bears look like. Most people know what bears look like.
Absolutely.
And they're pretty certain whatever they're seeing is not a bear, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I know you know what I'm about to say, but something that I think historically has worked against concepts like this, ideas like this, you know, is the fact that, and it still exists today, unfortunately, is that, and I'm not trying to criticize or knock anybody, but a lot of the people that have come forward to talk about some type of encounter, they're, unfortunately, they're not, I guess what I would say, maybe on the higher end of the social spectrum, right? A lot of people that have come forward aren't exactly, I'm not saying none of them, of course there are some of them, but I find because of certain individuals, how they, you know, how they look, how they dress, how they talk, it doesn't help their story. And they could be as genuine and, you know, heartfelt and all that stuff as much as they can. But I think something that's worked against kind of getting more momentum on this front is the fact that, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, that have been attracted to these types of things are people that, you know, are kind of maybe a little bit socially awkward. You know, they aren't maybe into as many, I guess, maybe typical or mainstream things. And it's, that's not a knock against them. But unfortunately, what happens is that when you look at things scientifically or academically, that comes into play. It provides, and it's not right, but from the scientific and academic perspective, that can work against them and what they're trying to say.
Yeah, there is a theory as regards the paranormal that it really loves liminality in the sense of spaces and people. You know, it likes appearing to people who are kind of on the borders, you know? And the trope of the, you know, the flying saucer landing in the middle of the trailer park isn't really a trope. I mean, it happened, you know, like this, like there's a lot of encounters that happen around trailer parks. It, there's something about the paranormal that, and liminality that go together. And my gut says, now I don't know, I can't prove it, you know, my gut says that that's part of it. Like it's going to appear to people in these sort of, you know, liminal states, these sort of, you know, quote unquote fringe people or something, you know, more often, not
very
always
interesting,
but more often,
you know, it's an interesting thing that it happens that way. You know, and I'm sure you know of him or have listened to him, but, a few years ago when I got into this, a lot of what I listened to at first was, David Politis and Missing 411, you know, stuff that he works on. And I like his approach a lot, right? He seems like a good guy. He's not perfect. I mean, we all have our faults and, you know, whether we say, you know, we're biased or not, subconsciously, there are things that come into the, you know, into your thoughts and dialogue that, you know, overall you may look like you lean one way or the other, even though you might not be saying you do.
Of course.
But I think overall he does a good job in expressing the evidence and his thoughts and such, you know, and then that, I would say that really got me interested and started thinking about all this again. And that's what kind of made me recollect this particular incident. I will say one other thing too, you know, just, I guess, talking about the subject in general, my dad was, he's since passed, but he was in the oil field. So he would do a lot of business in Venezuela. He'd fly down there, you know, quite often, do business and come back home and that type of good stuff. And on more than one occasion, and he was a straightforward guy, now don't get me wrong, he appreciated like Arthur C. Clarke, right? He loved Arthur C. Clarke and those types of things, you know, the unknown and things like that. But on more than one occasion, he said he saw UFOs when he was in Venezuela. And he said that it was not an unusual thing, which I always, you know, as a kid, I was always fascinated. I was like, Dad, you know, did you really think? Like, yeah. And, you know, I could tell he wasn't pulling my leg. He wasn't just trying to impress me or make me laugh or, you know, kind of a, you know, be joking with his son, that type of thing. He truly believes it was, you know, he couldn't recognize what it was. He saw it himself with his own eyes. He's spoken to others that did. And I just thought it was interesting when he said it wasn't like too big of a deal, you know, it's like, man, it must happen there quite a bit for it to just be kind of like, oh, that's, you know, it's them again. But yeah, man.
So did you ever go back into that part of the woods?
You know, I can't repent. I don't think I did. Mm-hmm. I didn't go in that part of the woods. And not long, well, I shouldn't say not long. I would say within the next, you know, decade and forward, a lot of development happened. So big subdivisions, you know, additional houses, highways, interstates, you know, that really started to dissect and just, you know, chop up essentially this big mass of forest that was there. You know, there's things around. You hear every place has kind of their own thing. Like down here, it's like the Rougarou and shit like that.
Yeah.
Growing up, I had never heard anything myself directly, you know, about any of that. And I knew quite a bit of people that hunted and did things like that. Now, I never asked them point blank, right? But it's something that I had heard about, but I hadn't heard from anyone that experienced it directly. Mm-hmm.
Of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I will say just a few weeks ago, I was talking to a client of mine. He's a friend as well. And he was a big hunter and he goes when he can, but you know, he's got younger kids now, married. He doesn't hunt as much as he used to. And him and his dad would hunt a lot. Right. And I was just, we're BSing. And I was like, well, man, you know, when y'all were out, did y'all ever see anything unusual? He smiled. He looked at me. He said, what you mean, like Bigfoot? And I was laughing. We're at a coffee shop together. I was like, well, yeah, I said anything. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a Bigfoot, but just something that you wouldn't expect to see, you know, when you're out there, right? He said he hadn't, but his dad swears on multiple occasions that he has seen things. And I need to actually ask him again, because he said he was about to go further. Like his dad was doing something, but then he kind of stopped himself. Like, I don't know if his dad's like planning to write a book or he's, you know, jotted things down just to preserve his memory as he's, you know, we're all getting older, but it was something like that. Like it wasn't just, I remember when I saw that day, it was something more formal than that. So I'm finding if you can, you know, ask people that you kind of know and trust and you ask the right way, there's a lot more encounters with the paranormal, with cryptids, than probably anyone would guess. And again, going back to the math things, mm-hmm. there's just so much of it. It shouldn't be a question of, you know, does it exist? We're past that now.
Yeah.
You know, it should very much more get into, okay, let's get into some deeper forensics on what it is, where it's coming from, why is it here? Like with Bigfoot, you know, I've got my personal thoughts on what it is and such, you know. I don't, while I do believe mountains and caves and lava tubes and, you know, places like this are rich for them to dwell in and, you know, take up that space and hide out from the public, I don't think they're from here originally. I don't think they've been here. I hear a lot of people say, oh, they've been here thousands of years before we have. I don't know what they're basing that on. You know, maybe they know something that I don't, but I haven't heard or seen anything that make me feel that way. I will say though, I personally think that they can come and go. And I do think there's something paranormal about that. Mm-hmm. I think the logistics, I don't think they're here 100% of the time. In other words, I think some are here maybe by their own doing, maybe not. And I do think they can leave. And
I agree.
Again, just because of the math and the encounters, right? I do think there's a connection with orbs, which makes me think there's some type of capability. I'm not saying it's necessarily a technology, and I'm not saying it's, you know, they're super intellectual because of it. I don't necessarily think they're any smarter than we are. I think they're different. Mm-hmm. I do think they're biological. I think there's been enough reported stories to not make me feel like, you know, they're just something that exists in the ether. But there's also been enough, again, looking at it from a 360 perspective, enough encounters that they seem to disappear on some occasions, right?
Indeed.
That's very interesting.
When they are here, they leave hair behind, they leave footprints behind, they leave scat behind. They sometimes eat and kill things. When they're here, they act like natural animals. And this is what I always say. I don't blame the hunter.
Amazing.
I don't blame the hunter.
Yeah,
if one walks under his tree stand and he says, no, they're just animals. Because what he saw was a natural animal. But again, if you look at the phenomenon holistically, you have to take into account trackways that end in the middle of fields with no evidence of them going anywhere else.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
You have to take into account
what I was alluding to.
All the stories of people shooting them to no effect or even to weird effects, like people shooting them and where the bullet hole is, they got a glowing blue light coming out instead of blood.
Mm-hmm.
All these weird things. And you can't just write them off and say, well, those are the crazy people, because we're talking about an 8-foot tall monkey in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, either we're all crazy or you have to take into account all these things, you know?
That's exactly right. And I appreciate you saying what you're saying, because not that I'm necessarily looking for, you know, an echo on this, but that's how I see it logically as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, taking everything into account, these things do occur. The tracks do end in the middle of a field. How do you explain it? I think they can come and go, you know?
Oh, yeah. I believe it. Absolutely. I'm not sure how much Strange Familiars you've listened to, but your account reminds me of an account I had on. It's one of the earlier episodes by Gage. I think it was an episode called The Beast. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
I don't know.
Three young kids, probably about the age when you had your encounter. They went out in the woods together. They were all three of them were friends. Gage was one of them. He's the witness who called me, and he said what he saw was a big white creature, hairy creature, step down out of a tree. Ooh. And he said what he got from it was warning them away. It was telling them to get out of the woods, but basically because there was something back there that was going to hurt them or whatever. He got the feeling that it was warning them out of the wood. Wasn't into Bigfoot.
I never thought about that.
Didn't know anything about Bigfoot. Gets interested in Bigfoot as an adult, and he thinks about this. I'm gonna contact these guys, these other two guys that he hasn't talked to in years, right? And he said, and it's really interesting because the one kid he said was kind of a follower. He was kind of like just followed the two other kids around. So he contacts him, and the kid's like, "Oh, I didn't see anything. You guys just started running, and I followed you." And he contacts the third kid, and he said, "This is so interesting to me." He said, "This kid had a really hard home life. He's like, you know, I don't know if it was abuse or what was going on, but he had a really kind of bad home life." And he talked to that kid. He said, "Hey, you remember that thing in the woods?" And that kid said, "Yeah, it was pure evil." And he said, "Wait, well, describe it." And he said, "This kid said it was pure black, and it stepped down on the tree, and he said it was pure evil and it was going to kill us." So here we have two witnesses. That saw the same thing. They can agree on that it was big and hairy. It stepped down out of a tree. One saw a white creature that was protecting them. One saw a black creature that was going to do them harm. It's absolutely my favorite Bigfoot encounter of all time, because I think it says
amazing.
Yeah, it says so much about the phenomena. I think the episode's called The Beast. I want to say it's somewhere around, you know, episode 100 or so. I forget exactly. After 450 some episodes, they all run together. But it was pretty
early
on.
That's an amazing story, though, man.
Yeah, and it reminds me of yours a little bit, because if your friend saw something different than you saw, but you both saw something, you know, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit. Can you describe, like, the eyes a little bit? Like, when you looked at them, did they just look like eyes that had no body?
Yeah. So I would say it was almost like, if you wanted, you could, you know, in theory, you could draw the perimeter, the silhouette of a being around the two eyes, right? You could put the head and the shoulders and, you know, that type of stuff. You could almost fill in the blanks with your mind. Mm-hmm. But it was 100%, I believe, transparent except the eyes. And the eyes weren't 100% opaque. They also had some opacity to it. The eyes, as I recall, had yellow in it. And like I said, some type of black flakes, flecking to it. And the perimeters of the eyes, right? You know, if you look at a person's eyes, you've kind of got a kind of an ellipse, yeah, right? A sideways ellipse. So imagine that ellipse, but kind of with, instead of nice smooth lines, kind of jaggedy around it. Non-uniform, asymmetrical, just almost, you know, sketchy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what fills it in, again, wasn't anything around like a pupil or cornea. It was just that color, which was, I believe, more yellow than white, and a few flecks of black. Like, I see some black in that. So it wasn't like, even though I saw them, I couldn't tell where it was looking, right? Because if it was a person, you could see the pupils and you go, okay, they're looking at me or they're looking to the left or right. You could just see the eyes in this case. Mm-hmm. And what I found interesting, of course, was how high they were, you know, which again, if I had to fill in the rest of the body around the eyes, I mean, that was, I mean, it had to have been seven plus feet, mm-hmm, off the ground. Yet when I was in the field and I turned around and looked, it was lower.
Yeah.
I would probably say more around my eye level at the time, which again, let's assume I was, you know, 4'9", you right, know, yeah, 4'8", that type of thing. And it also, you know, to your point, you know, maybe what if it was a, you know, kind of a steward, if you will, and someone that was kind of keeping us from harm, you know, maybe it was the same thing that was there, you know, day or whenever we had gone prior to, which was either the day before that or a couple of days before that. Mm-hmm. And it was coming to warn us, maybe by making the sounds and, you know, just doing enough to get us to leave. Maybe that was the message that it was trying to deliver, and it worked. Again, from my perspective. Now, what you're saying, you bring up a fantastic point, and this is exactly what I was looking to get out of this conversation, so I really appreciate it, Tim, is that I would have never thought about my friend. His name was Jeff, by the way. I would have never thought that Jeff, I knew he saw more than I did because of how upset he was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I knew something had to have been different. Now, look, I was scared, right? It's something that is unknown. I was like, what right. the hell is that? Like, oh my God, I'm scared.
Right.
But it, to me, his reaction went beyond that. Again, this is a person that's more grounded as a kid, precocious for his age in terms of maturity and intellect. I feel confident and solid about saying that. But even then, as he's explaining it to his dad, right, and expressing to him what he saw, he was not, it was interesting. I shouldn't laugh. I don't even know why I did, but he wasn't standing for the fact that his dad said, you know, you're lying or you didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. Jeff was emphatic. Like, no, 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 you don't understand. You know, we saw something that should not have been there. We saw something that was unusual. You know, this thing scared me. I mean, it's like he was panicking. Mm. And, you know, he didn't even, looking back, I think they moved, you know, probably within a year or two after that. I don't know if it had anything to do with that, of course. I remember a little bit of him and I talking about it some, and he just, you know, it was kind of like he didn't really want to talk about it too much. I don't know if that's because, you know, him and his, he had a bad experience with his dad, and, you right. know, he, yeah. his dad didn't believe him. So he's like, oh, you know, like, I don't want to talk about it because, you know, whether I saw it or not, whether I believe it or not, doesn't really matter because my parents aren't believing me. So,
right,
you know,
right.
whatever. But I'm glad you share that with me, because to me, that does help helped my thoughts in that I did feel he experienced something differently than I did.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With that.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, you know, and I've been places with like my investigation partner, Chad, where I know we're looking at the same, there's a place we go where we see weird lights pretty regularly. Site, we call it Site 7, just a code name, so it doesn't get overrun with people. And I know we've been there and we've both been looking at the same light, and he's described it different from what I was seeing. And another time,
that is so wild.
Yeah. Another time I went there, I had another friend, John, who at first didn't believe us. He said, take me there. I'm going to explain to you what these lights are. I said, I am open to it. If you could tell me what these are, like, no problem. So what we did,
please do.
What we did with John is we hiked in during the day and just waited until night, which we'd never done before. And sometimes it gets kind of scary in this place. And I thought, wow, this is going to get really scary.
I can imagine.
This is going to get scary tonight. It didn't. It seemed very playful that night. I don't know if it's, I have no idea why, but at some point the lights were coming so close to us that John was on his knees trying to grab one of these lights. He was reaching out, trying to grab it. That's how close they came to us. And he was laughing. He's saying, I don't know what these are. And he's just laughing out loud. I don't know what these are. I said, I told you, I told you there's something here. But in any case, I was about 6 feet to his left when he was reaching for this light.
His left.
And
okay.
I said, what do you see? And he said, it's the size of a golf ball, and it's glowing. Now, what I saw 6 feet to his left. Now, again, I'm in a different position, but not that far away. What I saw looked like a little point of light. That's all I saw. I saw the light, but it just looked like a little point of light. And that just, it tells me like something's going on with perception and this stuff. And sometimes I think two people can be looking at the same thing and maybe see something a little different.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you something too, if I can, before we finish here,
sure.
That I think has an effect on this, or at least it's something that I'm learning more about that is changing how I look at these things. Frequency, wavelengths, energy, these are things that, you know, in the spectrum in which our eyesight can deduce what's there, right? Mm-hmm. Can bring in sense logically into our brains and say, okay, that's a television, that's a wall, that's, you know, a pair of shoes.
Right.
There's so much we cannot see with our eyes. Yet we put so much trust and, you know, kind of black and white, either it is or it isn't, based on what we can see.
Right.
And the reality is, and again, you know, this gets into quantum physics. It gets into various types of, like I said earlier, different wavelengths and the presence of things that may be there, but we can't reconcile it because we don't know how to, you know, render it in a way outside of what we have at our disposal, which are typically our eyes, right? There are instruments, scientific instruments, as you know, that can, you know, night vision, heat sensors, these types of things. And as I understand, they're getting, you know, better at that, right? And to the point where I've heard about these devices seeing objects because of different light wavelengths on the spectrum that any other type of device, camera, eyes couldn't see, but yet, you know, when you use this device, like, hey, holy, there's an object there.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, it's empty space. But I do think there's a lot to that. And when we talk about perspectives and dimensions, I think it has a tremendous amount to do with that. And one thing I think related to that, that I find kind of funny, although I appreciate science. Again, like I said, I'm in technology, been in technology my entire life. I work with highly analytical, scientific, intelligent people. But when you look at physics as we know it, right, scientists, or at least the ones I'm familiar with, say that the principles of physics as we know it exist throughout the universe the same way. Like it's the principles as they happen here are the same anywhere. And there's some that are, you know, I mean, they say that passionately. I find that funny because I don't believe that. I don't think we know nearly enough about physics and such as quantum physics. That's, by the way, quite counterintuitive. To make us feel first that we even really understand how physics operates where we are, right. Let alone be so bold as to say, well, you know, this is how it operates on the other side of the damn universe.
Right.
Are you familiar with quantum entanglement? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, just enough to get me in trouble. But yeah, I like the slot experiment and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's an amazing, amazing thing, you know, that if you change the state of one of those particles, and it changes the state of the other one that it coincides with, immediately, instantaneously, regardless of where it is in the universe. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's heavy stuff.
And observation changes it. I mean, that the act of observation changes it. That is
like measuring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's crazy. And
it is.
I wish I would have said this. My co-author ascribed this to me, and I did not say it. I sadly had to tell him, no, that wasn't me. But he said that I said one time that if you think you know quantum physics, you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish I would have said that. That was someone far smarter than me said that. But I do like that because it's what we know of quantum physics is like, we've just scratched the surface of it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. And look, I think that's fascinating too, though, right? Like there's so much we don't know. And I think it has a part in the things that we're talking about now. You know, I think it's related. I think it has something to do with a lot of this. It's just, and hopefully it'll continue to get better and we'll make, you know, more sense of things. But like I've always thought, when you hear about people say, oh, well, you know, Bigfoot knows when a camera's, you know, tied to a tree. I don't think they know that because it's an electronic device. I think they know it because there's a battery in it. There's a source of energy. Mm. I think it knows there's a source of energy there, not because it's a camera. Again, that's just my, you know, ridiculous two cents. But
yeah. I mean,
I think it knows those things. It has a sense for those things.
Yeah. If you look at the way the phenomenon reacts to video versus audio, for instance, for some reason, and again, this is, you know, you sound crazy saying this, but it doesn't like video. And my friend Tobe Johnson has said it, and I borrowed this from him. He said, it's almost as if we're not allowed to film it. And that's a crazy thing to say, but if you look at like Skinwalker Ranch, where they had all the time in the world to experiment with this stuff, they try to film it, the cords literally get cut and they can't see.
There's always something happening, right?
Yeah.
To prevent that from occurring. You're spot on.
I don't even bother trying to take video anymore. Very rarely. I might take a picture very, very rarely. For the most part, audio. And I've gotten some really cool stuff on audio, but it's not as satisfying for some people because they want that video.
Yeah.
They want that video, but I don't know if we're ever going to get anything clear. Over time, my feelings on like the Patterson-Gimlin film, they go back and forth on it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, do we get a clear film ever? I don't know that we do, you know, which is weird. Yeah. And it throws all these blob squatch type films into another perspective then, you know, like maybe we're just never going to get anything better than that. And maybe they are legit. I don't know, but it's certainly fascinating and I'm here for it. I have not grown bored yet. So
I think you're doing a great job, man.
Oh, and I like your
music, by the way, and your artwork.
Thanks so much.
I've done quite a bit of artwork when I was younger. I just need to get back into it as I've gotten a little bit older. I enjoyed it. I've been in technology for many years, but I'm wanting to get back more on the creative side. But yeah, man, your music's awesome.
Oh, thanks so much. Well, let me ask you a fun question before I let you go.
Sure.
On the morning of April 18th, 1961, Joe Simonton saw a silver disc on his farm. He went out, investigated, and stepped aboard the craft. He encountered three dark-skinned humanoids who handed him an empty jug. Joe filled it with water and brought it back for them. In return, they gave him some pancakes. Would you eat the pancakes?
I've heard this question before.
Yeah.
On your show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard various responses. I like the girl, I heard one of the females say, because she was from the South, she was like, yeah, you damn right I'm going to eat it because that's what we do in the South. but I guess it would, like, if I'm at my age now, no. Mm-hmm. If I was younger, I'm sure I would have because I was, you know, more influential then. Mm-hmm. But no, now I wouldn't. Yeah, I'd be extremely skeptical.
Yeah, because too many questions surrounding those pancakes.
Seriously, man. Yeah. I just, you know, I'd appreciate the act of kindness, but I'm like, yeah, I think I'll pass. I'll save it for later.
My favorite was the woman who said, no, I'm not going to eat your pancakes, but come back to my place. I'll make you pancakes. I thought that was the nice answer. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good, man. That's nice and cordial.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Paul, thanks so much for sharing your stories.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I'd like to stay in touch, too. If you ever meet anything or have anything interesting to share, please call or text me. I'd appreciate it.
I would like to thank our patrons. Without patrons, we could not and would not make Strange Familiars. Thank you so much, patrons. If you'd like to help us out and get extra content besides, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Our patrons get commercial-free versions of the weekly shows, plus full extra episodes of Strange Familiars every month. There was no weekly episode last week, but patrons got a show, for instance. We promise at least one full exclusive episode every month for our patrons. Sometimes we do more. We'll try to give you extra content whenever we can. Again, to help us out, to support Strange Familiars, you can go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There is also an option via Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe there. The program there is called Patron of the Strange, and Apple Podcast subscribers get the weekly commercial-free episodes as well as the bonus episodes monthly. Thank you once again, wherever you support us. All right, so we have some other thanks to give out. Zeb sent me this really cool Our Lady of the Outer Limits figure. It's this cast figure of Mary, different elements in it. I'm not sure exactly which elements are this. I think the person who casts these puts different herbs and so forth.
Oh, well, it's like purple with a certain, when it catches a light in a certain way. Oh, no, I guess it was maybe because it was going past the blue light on the thing, but it looked purple like... Is it resin or something?
Yeah, it's just some kind of resin that, but they put like different things.
Yeah, they can see little things in it
and stuff in it.
Huh. Well, that's snazzy.
Yeah, it's a really neat little Mary figure. Thank you so much, Zeb. I really like it.
Should I put this over with 172 other Marys over there?
You can put it right there. I think it's a good spot for it.
Oh, underneath this Mary, but beside the other two nuns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next to the other Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Next to the other big nun.
The other big nun. Mm-hmm.
Oops.
There's no shortage of statues here in Strange Familiar Studio.
There's rabbits, too, though. I have a rabbit collection.
There are rabbits in here as well, but I think Mary's outnumbering your rabbits by some number.
Well, it's springtime, so they are in sort of an epic battle.
I also would like to thank Kirk H., Jason W., and Kristen J. for their donations. Thank you so much. They're always a huge help. Definitely needed for the Indiana trip. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right, Allison.
Yeah.
Now, you've had time off from these curiosities of the week. I've been pretty flexible with this.
It's time to get back to work.
What do you have for us this week?
I have a morning card, but it's kind of a little different than a typical morning card because it's got two people on it.
I think it's been a while. I think we've done a morning card before, but tell us again, what is a morning card? What were they?
Oh, it's basically like, you know, when you go to a funeral and they hand you that little pre-printed thing with a little thing on it and it has whatever funeral you're currently going to on it.
Yeah.
This is a much more stylish version, which is like the size of an antique cabinet card size. And they're usually black and gold and they have the birth and death dates of the person. And they're usually some, you know, some death imagery. You get your doves, you get your in loving remembrance of, maybe an open book. And this one says gone but not forgotten. But it's a husband and wife, so they had to wait till the second person died to get these printed up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They didn't die at the same time?
No, one died in 1908 and one died in 1915. So upon the death of the husband, who died later, they had them printed up for Levi and Leah Zartman, who I think actually, I am related to, but they're from this area, so it's not like a huge, it's not a huge leap.
Mm-hmm. Which means Chad's also related to them.
Yeah, Chad and I are very closely related. out of the circle of all the people that...
Of all the strange familiars.
Yeah, or even like just friends we've had it come over and I'm like, oh, like I'll do your genealogy while you're here kind of thing. I think Chad has been the closest.
Were you guys like third cousins or something?
It might be close. Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Too close for comfort, maybe. and my plumber's name as a kid, their name was Zartman, so here we go.
Oh, so yeah.
So they're definitely.
So here's the mourning card in loving remembrance of Levi and Leah Zartman. Has a nice little poem on it.
But I also have, that isn't currently for sale. I have to dig it out. But I have like the company that made these made like salesman samples to send out to people if they wanted to get them. And I have a salesman sample from the company with like different possible designs on it.
That's cool. All right. So I'll take an image of this and I'll put it in the show notes. And if you click on that, it'll take you to our Etsy shop where you can purchase this and other curiosities of the week, those that have not sold. There are a few in there. Also in Etsy, artwork, originals and prints, copies of my books. If you get them from Etsy, they come signed. You don't even have to ask. I sign them before I put them in the mailer. Strange Familiars t-shirts, patches, stickers, and more. Allison has some antique photography up there. I think I'm currently sold out of the paracord rosaries, but I'll make more as soon as possible. Last week I was just recovering, just basically recovering from Indiana. It was... I know that sounds dramatic, but...
Even just to drive like that is like... Ugh.
It was something. It was beautiful. We had a great time, but I definitely needed time to recover. I'll get more paracord rosaries up there, but we have Flowered Path t-shirts. We have Petals and Thorns, the sort of zine of Catholic ephemera I made, and much more. Our Etsy shop name is Lost Grave, but if you go to Etsy and you type in Strange Familiars, you should see our stuff come up. There's always links in the show notes to our Etsy shop. We will soon be selling on Whatnot. And if you're not familiar with Whatnot, it's a live auction app. Our name on Whatnot is Strange Familiars. Should be able to find us. It's the same as our name on Instagram. We will be doing ephemera shows where we sell ephemera, like photographs and...
Trade cards,
things like this Victoriana, mourning card.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll be doing shows where I sell my artwork and books and so forth. So we'll try to mix it up. These will be live auctions. They'll be, you know, you can pop in and almost like an extra Strange Familiar show, but obviously it's going to be...
There'll be banter.
Yeah, it's a live auction as well, though.
I'm even planning, just, you know, as a heads up, I'm going to paint my nails.
You're going to do your nails?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They're still not going
to
be...
I noticed fans. When I saw some other Whatnot shows, I noticed the women do tend to have their nails done.
And mine aren't going to be that fancy. Mine are just...
Just going to be done.
They're just going to be hastily painted.
No. Do you want me to do little Bigfoots on them?
No. I don't. So, but, I mean, maybe one.
I'm not sure when we're going to start with that. Hopefully soon. We'll make announcements, obviously, on the podcast when we start those. We'll make them on Discord. We'll make announcements on Facebook. We'll let everybody know. We're going to try to do them at the same time. We're thinking now maybe like Fridays and or Saturdays. And just it'll be the same
your
time.
Or nighttime, maybe Thursday night after the show or something.
Something like that. Yeah, it'll be the same time. We'll try to do the same time every week. And I think it'll be fun. It'll be a cool thing. And live auctions are always fun. And I'm going to do things like, you know, live drawings sometimes, right? Where I do a drawing and you can bid on that drawing that I do. You know, sketches more than things like that. Remarks on books and prints and stuff. We can do that.
We're just going to try to get a tutorial first from our friends at Riverbend who do this
right,
like five times a week.
Yeah, I wanted to mention like Riverbend Comics is already on Whatnot and they do shows several times a week. I think they do at least four shows a week or something. So you can check out them and support them already on Whatnot. And John is going to teach us how to do it. And then we're going to be doing it. It'll be sort of, like I said, like a regular thing. Looking forward to that. You mentioned Chad before, or I did.
I mentioned Chad because, you know, we're...
You're semi-related.
Yeah. Not like in a Flowers in the Attic kind of way.
Chad has, for years now, been doing these things. It's once a month on Saturdays at Sunnewald Natural Foods in Spring Grove, Pennsylvania. It's 4796 Lehman Road in Spring Grove. He does these things called Walk with a Woodsman, and they are free classes that Chad puts on. Coming up, the first one will be April 13th. The focus will be Wild Teas. May 11th, the focus will be Firecraft. June 8th, Sheltercraft. July 13th, Bundle Bow and Traps. August 10th, Water Gathering and Filtration. September 14th, Camp Lighting. He tends to do, breaks it up for like 9 to 10:30 a.m. is wilderness skills, 10:30 to 11 a.m. is a break, and then 11 to 12 noon is like a foraging walk where he takes you through the woods. I will try to remind everybody about these events, you know, as they come up. Like I said, the first one's on April 13th. It's called Walk with a Woodsman. You can meet Chad, you can learn stuff.
He's got a full page ad with himself in full woodsman gear there.
Yeah, it's the little Natural Awakenings local magazine. Chad's on the back cover. You can see Chad in person and learn stuff from him. I know these are very well-received events. Again, it's at Sunnewald Natural Foods. Their phone number is 717-225-3825. Their website is sunnewald.org.
They're the old school, one of the old York natural food stores that have been around since you couldn't buy tofu anywhere else kind of
yeah,
places.
I remember.
It was like the only
I was non-dairy, like, way before it was trendy. Just by necessity, I wasn't like...
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't have milk. And they were the first place I could go to reliably to get rice milk, I remember. And it was only rice. They had soy milk and rice milk.
That's yeah, right, the shelf-stable stuff.
Yeah. And I would go there and buy...
There's a certain kind of smell in, like, old-school
natural
food stores that I just love. It's like the smell of, like... pre-made hippie sandwiches, and you feel like you're doing something.
So once again, that's Chad's Walk with a Woodsman. First one is April 13th. I will try to promote these each week beforehand. All right, Allison. I think that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back soon with more Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you'd like to hear more or purchase music, go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Instagram at Strange Familiars, one word, no underscore. We're also on Facebook for all you old folks, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. I count myself among one of these old folks. At Facebook, you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group. For Strange Familiars merch, strangefamiliars.com/merch. And you can always find us at strangefamiliars.com. Your true love know from
sweet flowers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.